This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, looking at the threat represented by Vladimir Putin in the speech to the Russian people, the Russian nation, the Russian memory in these last days. What is surprising is that the question of nuclear weapons again enters into the remarks, this time boldly and in detail. It's important also to mention that nuclear weapons have long been a conversation that was questioned as to whether those would end the world. Right now, Vladimir Putin is making a distinction that our guest Peter Husey of the Hudson Institute has helped us to understand. Russia has an arsenal of tactical nuclear weapons, not strategic. It has that as well, but strategic are city killers. Tactical are meant to be used, so-called, on the battlefield, which, to my knowledge, has never happened. And yet, Vladimir Putin's language points to precedent about using nuclear weapons. Precedent. This is what's important. He said, in part, the United States is the only country in the world that has used nuclear weapons twice, destroying the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan. And they created a precedent. He goes on to say, recall that during World War II, the United States and Britain reduced Dresden, Hamburg, Cologne, and many other German cities to rubble without the least military necessity. It was done ostentatiously and, to repeat, without any military necessity. They only had one goal, as with the nuclear bombing of Japanese cities, to intimidate our country and the rest of the world. Peter, a very good day to you. The language is specific about using nuclear weapons. This is, to my knowledge, the first time that we have to deal with not the threat, but the fact of Vladimir Putin making a case to his own people that by doing this, we're following through, responding to the cruelty of the United States. Does that, to your mind, change the posture of our thinking about nuclear weapons on the battlefield? Good evening to you, Peter.
And good evening to you, John and Gordon. Let me just say my remarks are my own and not that of any organization with which I'm affiliated. Yes, what is Mr. Putin is saying is that in the service of aggression, he gets to use nuclear weapons because in the service of stopping a war, the United States did 70 some odd years ago. The logic is impeccably wrong, but Mr. Putin doesn't really care. This is to justify in his own mind and with his own propaganda people, they'll have something to say. So, yes, this now becomes we get to use nuclear weapons because we want to use nuclear weapons. And we'll, you know, dream up an idea of why it's we have a right to do it. So, yes, John, it has moved the needle closer to, God forbid, the use of nuclear weapons.
And is that something fresh to our military charged with those nuclear weapons in Europe? I understand they're gravity bombs. Is this something they will read in a new fashion than the strategic threat of past years?
They did already. In the last couple of weeks, I know that a number of our folks took what he said, Medvedev said, very seriously. Remember, Medvedev said, if we use nuclear weapons, meaning in Russia, the United States will be too scared to respond. And that definitely got their respect. And that's what he's doing. And Putin is trying to intimidate us. What I don't understand yet is, okay, you threaten to use nuclear weapons, and let's say you don't. What is it you want Ukraine and everybody to do? Stop sending weapons to Ukraine, stand down, surrender. He has said he'll engage in peace talks if Ukraine recognizes the four provinces that he cut off and now has had these fake referendum. That's the only way out. And I don't see how Ukraine can basically, you know, go ahead and concede and say, yes, you get to dismember my country. Gordon, so, yeah, that's serious, because what's his next step?
Gordon, you have a question for Peter.
Peter, when we think about our response to Vladimir Putin's threats to use nuclear weapons in the Ukraine battlefront, we've also got to think about China, and other people have as well. So, for instance, recently the Brookings Institution, led by Michael O'Hanlon, their famous researcher, has essentially said that our response to Taiwan, an invasion of Taiwan, is going to be very much predicated upon our belief of China using tactical nukes. China has threatened to do so. O'Hanlon has essentially said that the United States should abandon the concept of extended deterrence. In other words, not use our nukes to protect our allies and friends in the region. Your comments?
Well, as I pointed out, the three of them proposed three things, all of which are wrong. They say, don't say you're going to defend Taiwan and keep it ambiguous. Well, ambiguity doesn't help in this case. You have to be serious about one way or the other. Number two, they say, don't develop any theater nuclear weapons. Well, we don't have any in Europe, in Asia and Pacific. And by basically saying we're going to leave it at a conventional level, ask the U.S. military, what happens when nukes get introduced into a conventional conflict? In all the tabletop exercises we've been doing over the last years, we don't win. We may not completely lose, but we don't meet our objectives by stopping aggression. So that's a non-starter. And then he says, don't decouple economically. Well, that's precisely the lever that China uses on Wall Street to make sure that the United States does not prepare to defend Taiwan, because people would rather see their 401k go up than see a Taiwan government come free. That's BlackRock's philosophy, as you know. So all across the board, the report fails to do the right thing. It fails to come to say we're going to defend Taiwan. It says we're going to continue to give money to China. They raise $1.7 trillion a year in our capital markets. It's used predominantly, a lot of it is to buy weapons with which to what? Go after Taiwan. And as I told you, I was reading the report and I said, what if you substitute Nazi Germany 1936 for the word China in the report? Because the report assumes, and it says so, that China is looking for norms and standards, that, and we are also. And we just have to figure out where we have commonality. As my friend Keith Payne, the head of NIPP, said, China is a revanchist power, meaning they want to change boundaries of nation states by use of military force. That's got nothing to do with establishing norms and standards. What it does is makes them the hegemon and us the basically person who sits on the sideline and lets it happen. That's what he's up to. That's what Xi Jinping is up to. And you know that very well. Same thing for Putin. And that's not only not a prescription for a safe world, it's a prescription to allow people to use nuclear forces and conventional forces in the service of aggression that they get away with. And that's not a good thing. It's a terrible thing.
Response to the event of Putin using a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine conflict. I take this from analysis last week. Quickly, double down on sanctions. Two, demonstrate a nuclear weapon in the Arctic with no human casualties. Three, a conventional response, take out the Russian fleet or end Russia's ports of facilities. And four, a decap, perhaps using a tactical nuclear weapon on Moscow. Are those four options exhaustive, Peter? Is there a fifth option that we would have in the event that a TAC nuke is used? We have a couple of minutes.
Yeah, we have you can think of another 10 or so options. The issue to me is, what are you trying to achieve that if you achieve will stop Putin in his tracks? And that is the great unknown, which I wrote today for the Federalist. We are trying to determine whether or not his nuclear threats are bluff. We're beginning to think maybe they're not. Certainly that makes us, you know, that's a tough situation to be in. The question is, we can do sanctions, we can do a tactical nuke strike, we can do all these things. My concern is, what is it that you would achieve by so doing that would make Mr. Putin stand down and not, God forbid, use these ever again? That I don't know, John, because this man is not as transparent in some respects than he should be. He said recently, he said, well, we're not trying to recreate the Soviet Union, which I would take as a good sign. And then he said, as long as you recognize the four provinces as Russian, we'll then sit down and talk at the negotiating table. But then he turns around and says, Ukraine has to surrender, otherwise we're going to nuke somebody. And so my view, John, is talking about the options sounds all, you know, very strategic and everything. And, you know, we can look at that, but none of it has anything to do with anything unless you talk about what are you trying to stop Putin from having in his quiver of, you know, weapons, whether it's command and control, you take him out. I don't know if you could find him. You take out the seaport. It's valuable to him. All these things you have to ask yourself, is that enough to get him to stand down? Because that's such a serious loss that he values so much. And that analysis I haven't seen yet, is we have to figure out what if he lost something would make him stand down. And John, is not knowable right now. It's a judgment call, but that's where our thinking should be.
Final matter for you, Gordon. We just have less than a minute. Do you measure that Xi Jinping and his leadership is watching Putin to see what he'll do with the nukes? Is China for this or against it?
Certainly, Xi Jinping is looking very closely at the American response. They've seen the failure in Afghanistan. They've seen the failure to deter Vladimir Putin. And I believe that they are emboldened to do something against Taiwan or some other neighbor.
And they're watching Putin about nukes in particular, or just all of it?
Yes, because they've been making nuke threats of their own, especially after they saw Putin make his threats, and at least for the moment, getting what he wants by having NATO and the United States not fully support Ukraine.
Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, Peter Husey of the Hudson Institute. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.